And so as we are practicing many hours every day, meditation, it is important to clarify what we are doing and why we are doing it the way we are doing it. So sometimes the question may arise, you know, what is that for? I'm spending all those hours sitting without moving. So I'll say a few words so we may understand why we practice this way and the context that gives meaning to that. I mean, there is a certain vision of the world that justify the way of practicing this way, and maybe another vision of the world, or in another vision of the world, that would be not so important to practice this way. This is really included in the Buddhist tradition. Doesn't mean that to practice that one need to believe any specific things or to believe in Buddhism. Still, it does take its specific meaning in this tradition. If we were wondering, yes? No, it's okay. I think I'll raise that. Okay, I think it's okay. So if we were to ask the question, where is the truth? Of course, various traditions will have different answers. If we take the revealed tradition, the great revealed tradition, the truth lies in the revealed text, in the holy text, that where the truth is to be found. In the Bible, in the Quran, in the Vedas for the Hindus, and if you want to find it, you have to find it in the books. You cannot correct anything because it has been transmitted in a very specific way. You cannot start to make some editing. It can be a question of translation sometimes, but you cannot transform anything. For that, you need to go back to the source. And not many people have this direct line, so in order to change anything, so we respect the revealed text. And I think those texts are usually complex enough, and sometimes even with some contradiction, that can give rise to deeper and deeper understanding. The Bishop of Lyon, Irenaeus, I think 2nd century, said, in the four Gospels, there are many contradictions. He said, it's very good, it forces the people to think. There was not a problem, so often in the text we would like sometimes to be a bit more explicit, but it's the contrary. It does give all the depth and possibility of interpretation. Yet, it means that in those traditions, the truth has been revealed and is in the holy text. So if we want to know it, we will study the text deeper and deeper, and that where it lies. In the Buddhist tradition, there are also texts, respected texts like the sutras, supposed to have been spoken by the Buddha, but they don't have the same stature. The Buddha has not received a revelation. He's not a prophet, and he's an ordinary man, smart, it seems, wise, but he's not a god, he's not a prophet, so he has no specific line of transmission. So his words are explanation, description of his own understanding, his own spiritual path. But they don't have the value, the holiness that the revealed texts have. So we can read them, we can study them, but sometimes some people want to apply the same type of analysis that are used in the holy text. For the holy text, it doesn't make very much sense because the words that do not have the same power in the Sutra of the Buddha than they have in the revealed text. It's absurd to start to analyze each word. Especially that the sutra has been written down in various period, and who knows what were the words of the Buddha. So now to try to analyze the words and go back to the Pali or Sanskrit etymology may be interesting, but does not hold the truth that the revealed texts have. So in the Buddhist tradition, we cannot look for the truth in the text. The text will just give indications. They will indicate a path to be followed, but they are not revealer of the truth. I mean, sometimes some people have started to hold the text also in an ultimate way, but that is not really specific to the Buddhist tradition. In the Buddhist tradition, three sources of knowledge are being described. When I say that, doesn't mean that this description cannot also appear in other traditions. So as a source of knowledge, there is a hearing, because usually the teaching were heard, a little bit like it's happening now in the tradition, but now I would say reading also, because there are so many texts being written. So one source of knowledge, the first one, is through hearing and reading. We gather all the information. But all the information that we can gather through hearing and reading, in a sense, is not really organized. We get all those information. We don't really know how to make sense of them. Tibetan canon, which is quite organized, it is 100 volumes of the sutras spoken by the Buddha. Each volume has many, many hundred texts. And there are 250 commentaries of the great Indian commentator. So it's vast. It's a vast volume of text. And there are certainly some different point of view in all those texts. So those can be learned, but then one need to make sense of all of that. And it is in the second aspect, reflection, starting to think about them in order to make sense for oneself, to organize all those informations in a meaningful way and in a slightly more personal way that does make sense for us. I mean, if this can change again and again, as we're getting more information, the understanding is getting deeper. So we reorganize this understanding. And then in the Buddhist tradition, the study of logic, where one start to learn argument, to really analyze something to see if it is coherent or not. There's epistemology, like in all the other tradition. This second part, the source of knowledge based on reflection, reason. And then there's the third source of knowledge, which is meditation. And in the third source of knowledge, meditation, we go deeper in a more intimate way. It's not only from the source, it's not source of text, it's not only from intellectual understanding, but it has to be experienced directly, not depending on the coherence of our reason, but to be seen directly. There are two types of meditation. One is called samatha, the other vipassana. Samatha is concentration, a way of bringing calmness and collectedness in the mind. And vipassana is a way to develop the sharpness of the mind that it can see reality, realize the truth, if you like. So to bring tranquility to the mind, calmness, collectedness, usually we need to place the mind on something. The mind need to hold on to something that is stable. And as the mind is holding on to something that is stable, the mind will become stable. Like if we imagine that something there, that is stable. Of course, we don't take something that is too shaky. And then the mind is holding onto that. If that is stable, the mind suddenly will also start to be stable. But for that, we need a holding. And then this holding is made through a concept. So what we use as a pole to help to bring stability to the mind can be different type of object. Can be a mantra. Some tradition, Buddha is being repeated. Or it can be an image of anything, image of the Buddha, or sometimes image of disc of light, blue, yellow, white, and so on, so that the meditator will just hold in his mind, or in her mind, just the disc of color, so that the mind will be just concerned by that, and pushing away any other things appearing, any thought, any other perception of bodily sensation, for example. So just the mind has only one job, is to hold on to this, here, this image, mental image, not seeing image. It means that the meditator will look at this disc of color. For sometimes, when the image is very clear, the meditator will close his or her eyes, and then that will be the object of meditation. Till the mind really gets completely quiet because the object doesn't move. There's a reason why we don't use, in this case, a visual object, because the eyes will become tired and the light is changing, so suddenly what did appear, a bright blue, will become darker and darker. So imagine, and if we were to change and put electrical light, then the color would change, so it's something that is changing. So only the mental image of that would be used. But the most common object used for concentration is the breathing process. So the breathing process is changing, but it has it repeats itself. And when we use breathing for concentration, we can count the in-breath and out-breath, or being aware if the breathing is long or short. So again, here it's also a concept. A long breath, a short breath is a concept based on an experience, or in-breath, out-breath. We name it, we qualify this experience, and that is to help the mind to become quiet and concentrated, not distracted. As we have maybe experienced so far, we know the mind can go in so many directions. It's difficult for the mind just to stay with one type of object. So there are many other objects, usually 40 objects that are used for bringing tranquility of the mind. Also some positive feeling like kindness or compassion or joy that can be used as a skillful way to bring tranquility to the mind, and to use something that is pleasant like joy or kindness is skillful, because the mind is quite happy to stay with something which is calm, which is joyful. If you think about something which is frightening or unpleasant, the mind will come to the sitting and say, I have to stay with that, will be unpleasant. But when you meditate with something that is pleasant, like kindness or joy, then the mind is willing to hold on to this experience. So it's a skillful way to bring tranquility to the mind. Yet it's still always holding to something. If we want to make the mind quiet, the mind need to be able to hold on to something. So that is the first aspect, that is called samatha, bringing tranquility to the mind. And this in itself cannot reveal the truth, as we were questioning at the beginning, to expand the truth. Samatha in itself just brings tranquility to the mind, not depths of wisdom. Yet it is very skillful, can be developed, very, very powerful aspect of the mind for some people, And for some people, it is not too difficult to develop, and for some other type, it's more difficult. It depends on the whatever. It is difficult to say before. I have a friend is in his daily life, seems quite distracted. You always forget many things, and he has such a power of concentration. So we cannot say in seeing a person distracted, say, oh, this person will not be good at concentration. We never know. Some people suddenly feel really at ease, and some other, they seem to be not so much distracted. For them, it's more difficult. So it's difficult to know beforehand who has this aptitude, this capacity, and who has less this capacity. Now, the second type of meditation is what we call vipassana. And vipassana is made with two words, vi and passana. Passana come from the root thing, seeing, past, to see, and vi is clearly. So to see clearly, to see deeply. And that is the development of wisdom. The practice that helps to see clearly reality so that we can realize the truth. And for that, this clear seeing, this V, the first part of the word, means to go through and to go through the concept. So in a sense, it is the opposite of samatha that needed a concept to hold on to, something to grasp. In vipassana, we need to go through the concept, not to stop at the concept, so that we can see things unveil, not cover by concept, when we can see things clearly, when there is no holding, when there is no concept. Concept can be mistaken. The concept is the interpretation of an experience. So that's why the experience of vipassana, as is not depending on a concept, bring access to reality without any doubt. It's very important to make a distinction between to know and to be aware, or to be conscious. If we want to understand what meditation is about, in the way we are practicing it here, it's essential to make this distinction, to know or to be aware, or to be conscious. To know is a way to translate any experience in a concept that we can keep. That's exactly. Knowledge can be accumulated. You can have a library full of knowledge. So this knowledge that we draw from experiences, when we name, when we conceptualize, and we can organize all this knowledge. We organize it in various groups and can again and again make different groups so that we know so many things. And people who know so many things is people that can speak very long because they know so many things, you know, for hours. Well, at least they believe they know something. But so in this sense, and the knowledge is always a translation of an experience into a concept. And this translation of an experience into a concept can be right or wrong. If I see somebody coming from far away, I said, oh, that is such person, or that's my friend, I see this from far away, and as this person is coming closer, oh no, that's not my friend, I was mistaken, this not this person. So my interpretation was wrong, but the fact that I was seeing was not wrong. There was a seeing. There was a seeing there of a person at a distance. Even a person could be mistaken because maybe, I don't know, that was just a tree, a small tree or something like that, that getting closer I would recognize. But the fact that there was here consciousness seeing, that cannot be mistaken. So the interpretation can be wrong. Now it is also possible, I hear the noise of a car leaving in the morning and I believe, well, that is my neighbor going to work. But then I maybe look through the window and I see his car still being there. So my understanding or interpretation of the experience of hearing was wrong. But the fact that I was hearing was right. So the experience before the interpretation, before the translation, cannot be wrong. But the interpretation can always be wrong. And we usually transform every experience immediately into a concept. Immediately for us it's a source of knowing, because that's what we need. And it's not a mistake, it is correct we do that. We need to know in order to act, in order to decide, in order to choose. This is the very practical aspect of our perception. But we can see how an experience, we cannot accumulate experiences. We can only accumulate knowledge. What we can keep in our mind is a translation into a concept, not the experience itself. If we imagine the sunset, maybe a beautiful sunset, we cannot keep it. The sun is setting, so it's disappearing, the light is changing, and it's gone. We cannot keep this experience. What we can keep is a memory, an image of that, but not the experience. If we could keep the experience, we could live our life anytime. I want to go for, when I was 5 years old, let's go and spend 1 hour when I was 5 years old, or maybe when I was 20. I can only do that by memory, more or less, a vague memory. So if we could really keep the experience, we could live any aspect of our life. But we know it's not possible. Maybe luckily. So only things we can keep is always translation, the image that we draw from the experience. And that is immediate in our perception. If you come in the meditation hall, and as you are walking, you have the sense that you are seeing the same meditation hall. But what you see every step, and it's very different if you are right at the door or if you are right in front, you see something completely differently. The experience of seeing is completely different. Now each one of us is seeing something completely different. But we believe we are seeing the same meditation hall. And that is correct, but that is the interpretation. We make an object of knowledge, this meditation hall, this is correct, but then it covers the experience. And as we are walking, we are not even aware that our experience is changing every step. That sometimes we may be more in the light, in the darkness, moving, and we see something different, different colors. We are not aware of that because the meditation hall concept come right in front, and finally we don't see anymore. We just see what we think, not what we see. And with respect to the meditation hall, it is not so dramatic, but sometimes it's more complex. You know? A person comes, is a friend. A person come, is an enemy. And we don't see a person anymore. Suddenly there's just this concept there that is projected, you know, or a nice person, a not so nice person. So we don't see anymore, we are just thinking. We are cut from the immediacy of our experience. Lost in the world that has been constructed. Again, it is not a problem to construct this world, but then we believe it is a reality. And then we are stuck, we are bound by that suddenly. It's like in a jail. The jail is not reality, is our own construction, and we believe they are the truth. The Chinese have a nice image to express that. They say the artist paint a tiger against the wall, and then he runs away. And in a sense, that's what we are doing. We are making a construct, we don't run away, but then we feel trapped. That may seem abstract, you know. story. The Chinese have a nice way of expressing that. But exactly what we're experiencing in our meditation, we can experience that. When we don't hold to the concept, to the translation of the experience, but we stay with the experience itself, we see that it is not limiting us. We see that there is a sense of freedom. And any experience. Just the fact that we don't hold on to the concept. And this is very striking. That only then can we understand the possibility of freedom that is there in our meditation. So we believe often in the meditation is just about recognizing the experience. So I recognize there are bodily sensation in my abdomen. So okay, I recognize, okay, I feel that and that. Sometimes I give a more precise name. And then we wonder, so what, you know? I'm doing that since the last 45 minutes or 30 minutes, and so what? What is so amazing with that? You know, nothing. Okay, they say it may be nice or bring peace and freedom. Okay, let's do it a little bit more. You know? But we feel that it's not really convincing. We'll try a bit more, and so we came from so far, so we'll try a bit more, you know, but still it doesn't seem to make much sense. With any experience, or the sleepiness, and the sleepiness is quite sleepy and difficult at time. Or sometimes can be sadness, or there can be other emotions. And we recognize them. So it's not about pushing them away. I recognize this is sadness, or this is anxiety. I recognize it. I'm doing my job as meditator. I want the reward. Where the freedom? Where doesn't come? Because there is very, very clear distinction between to know an experience and to be aware, to be mindful. Let's take sleepiness, because it's quite common and not so dramatic. So I may recognize this is sleepiness. So there's an experience there, I put the name. And this concept, sleepiness, is like the meditation hall. It's a concept that starts to veil the experience. Of course, I still feel as when we walk, it's not that we don't see anything because we have made this concept of the meditation hall. It's not that suddenly seeing that just disappear. But the concept is much stronger than the seeing. So we don't really are aware of all the nuance in seeing. But it's not that we don't see anymore. So with sleepiness, yeah, I'm aware. I'm experiencing something. But what is the strongest there is the notion of sleepiness. And then I don't really experience it. So it's a trouble. It's a problem. Huh? What to do with sleepiness? I start to get the manual, and the manual give some advice, you know, open the eyes big, or, you know, breathe stronger, whatever. And maybe I use that, and maybe sleepiness goes away. But I have not discovered anything, you know, just, how to fight a little bit against sleepiness when it's happening. I will not learn anything. Not what meditation is about, you know, fixing up experiences. It's about realizing that if I'm really aware, mindful of sleepiness, not making it an object of knowledge, a concept, but really experiencing sleepiness, I see that sleepiness is not a problem, doesn't bind me. Sleepiness does not cover the quality of presence or mindfulness. Mindfulness is not at all veiled in sleepiness. And that seems strange. Some people even don't believe. How is that possible? How is that possible that I would be sleepy and still be present? Doesn't seem to make sense. That's why we need to experience, to explore. Same with sadness. So I recognize this emotion, that is sadness there. Then sadness is heavy. I feel the bodily experience of sadness, linguistic sadness, heaviness in the chest, maybe. But I feel the emotion, the mind being with a very little energy. And then, well, I stay with that. It's not nice, and it does not open to anything. I'm just sad. So I wonder what is so interesting in just recognizing sadness. But again, I'm not really experiencing it when I can really experience it not through the knowledge I made from that, not through the concept, sadness, but this quality of mind. That is, we call sad, this emotion that we call sadness, suddenly I experience it, not through a concept, and I feel it has no power to affect me, not because I'm starting to be indifferent to anything, not at all, on the contrary, because I'm more open to feel it. Because I'm not stuck by to the name, the naming of it. Or bodily sensation. At the end. Then, bodily sensation. Okay, I feel this and that, and heaviness, lightness, I put a name, but I don't really experience it. So in this sense, that doesn't bring anything, it's just boring. I feel limited by all my experience. But I'm not limited by the experience, I'm limited by the naming of it. By the concept, exactly like when I walk in the meditation hall. So if there is a possibility of openness and more freedom in our life that meditation may make us discover, is not from indifference, is not from running away from experience, is from experiencing them without solidifying them and translating them into concept. And that we can do at every instant of our meditation. We learn with small things, a sensation, something very simple. We don't need to wait to be very sleepy or to get stronger emotion like sadness. But any experience, hearing, I just stay with the hearing experience. Or I just translate it and I'm hearing this and that, the next person coughing or the cow going by, or the bird singing. So I've translated that in an object of knowledge, which is not wrong, which is correct. But then I'm not anymore just experiencing. And this concept is a limitation. So this concept will veil the experiencing. This is not a matter of belief. It's a matter of trying it in our meditation. Maybe what I'm saying is right, maybe what I'm saying is wrong, but the only way to find out is through the practice. We cannot think about it, we have to practice, and practicing and just being in touch with ourselves. Not telling us stories. Although sometimes we tell a story, that's fine, okay, I know how to tell stories. Let's come to the experiencing itself. Yeah, okay, what was your question?
Sleepiness. I can see the difference between experiencing and naming and being in the name and... With sleepiness, if I'm aware, let's say, of the body sensation when I'm sleepy, and then I fall asleep. So how can I be aware?
If you're aware,
it's different. I'm asking. It's for me. It's different from sadness or other feeling that I can experience like pain or fear or sadness, and I see the, and where is it in the body, and with sleepiness, let's say I'm aware of the body sensations, and then I just fall asleep. Mm-hmm. I cannot be aware anymore. Mm-hmm. So is there no, is, with the sleepiness, I have a question, how can I be aware? Continue being.
Mm-hmm. Okay. First, sleepiness is not just a bodily experience. There's a quality of mind. We could be tired. We run very much. I'm very tired. I'm not sleepy. But often we are aware of the physical dimension because it's clearer. But it's a mental dimension of sleepiness. Yeah. But still, your question stays, you know. If now I am sad and I am taking in by sadness, then I am sad also. So in the same way, if I am taken in by sleepiness, which means that I'm holding this concept, then sleepiness become sleepy, become a veil, and I fall asleep. I fall asleep because I am believing in it. It's not that I am not sleepy, it's not what I mean, but I am holding to that and suddenly to this opacity that is sleepiness, and suddenly I am starting to fall asleep. But if I am aware when there's sleepiness, it's just a quality of the mind. Mind, the mind stays what it is, but it appears like in a foggy way. But the fogginess, the way of describing sleepiness, vague, the fogginess is like the reflection in the mirror is not the mirror. The mirror does not become foggy. So the mind appear as fogginess, which is sleepiness, but it is not foggy. The mind stays a mind, because it doesn't change, like the mirror doesn't change. So as soon as I can be connected with sleepiness, not holding or believing in it, as I could believe in sadness, suddenly it's amazing. That's why I'm speaking about sleepiness or tiredness. It's amazing. I am sleepy, I'm fully there, fully present. No, at this time, I'm not believing the story of sleepiness. It is a very vague way of expressing it. Okay? That's why I like to speak about sleepiness, because it's help us to discover something so precise about the nature of the mind. It's so amazing, because when we understand sleepiness, we understand it can work the same way with sadness, with even with fear, anxiety. But if we believe it's a problem, then we cannot explore it.
With sadness and with fear, I experience sometimes. With the sadness, I can feel happy, or I feel that it transforms. It's unbelievable. I try. It's
sleepiness does not need to transform, but it's just. I get again this example of the mirror. If I want to look at the mirror, I look at the mirror, I'm not so much concerned by what is reflected there. Let's say we need to buy a mirror for the dining hall. We don't need them, but let's imagine. So we go to the store of mirror then, and we want to choose one. We are not concerned with the reflection. Say, okay, that's a mirror, seems clear. And we see the mirror. But then if we ask the salesman there, said, well, do you have a mirror that does not reflect this strange face there, which is my face? I want one without this face. He's going to say, well, I'm sorry, but maybe you are in the wrong place. You know, you better go to the mental hospital, you know, because it's not what it is about. So you understand. So with a mind, when we believe in the appearance of sleepiness, then we say, oh, now there is sleepiness. And that's good that we do believe in it, because that's the way we can sleep at night. Mm-hmm. And that's not a problem, but we want to discover something different there, to really discover the nature of sleepiness. So if we don't hold on to that, especially not that it is problematic, then suddenly we discover in an amazing way, I can be sleepy and completely present and clear. And it's not different if I were not sleepy. There's no difference in the quality of being. No difference. Like in the mirror, no difference if I put it here or there. Toward light or darkness. Now again, you don't need to believe me. I have experienced it many times, otherwise I would not say it. And again, so many people say, find solution for sleepiness. You put some water on your head or open your eyes, and which I think is a pity, because we miss to understand something so deep with respect to our functioning, and in a not dramatic way, when you need to experience most the deepest anxiety and see it's just the mind, it's much more difficult. Sleepiness at least is not very dangerous. If at the most you will go and sleep, this is not dramatic. You know?
Notion automatically comes. So, what's the technique between being aware of something or feeling something or sensation or and the concept?
Yeah. When sleepiness arises, so maybe I realize I'm sleepy. You know, maybe after 10 times, oh, I am sleepy. So. Now, okay, I can open my eyes, do something about it, but I want to explore sleepiness. So I am sleepy. I got the knowing. That's true. But now I want to come back to the experiencing itself. Okay, I know I'm sleepy, but what is it I'm experiencing? Not so much observing it, but being this sleepiness, intimate with it without holding on to it. And then suddenly the mind is just there, very clear. With this appearance of sleepiness. So try, it is really trying in the practice. And the first element is not to believe the problem. It's not to believe that if I'm sleepy, I cannot be present. For at least to explore. If we believe that, then it's not possible. Okay? And I've mentioned since I'm here very much sleepiness. Not that I want to put people asleep, but I think it's really gives such a deep understanding of the nature of the mind when we can be fully present and there is sleepiness. It's quite striking, very interesting. Also, would reveal that it can be the truth in any experience. And tiredness works also very well. If in the evening, or morning, in the evening, if you are tired and we don't hold on, identify with tired, I'm so tired, and then we can be fresh, completely there, and there's tiredness. So exploring those less dramatic situation again, because when people do experience deeper sadness, this is more difficult because we identify and then it's heavier. Now we don't choose. We don't say, well, sadness, it would be next course. This course, I'm experiencing sleepiness. We don't. But when there is small difficulties, tiredness, sleepiness, it is really a nice opportunity to know something so deep about the nature of the mind. And freeing, just to experience, I can be sleepy and completely not affected by it. And I'm not rejecting it. So explore. Don't believe me. Explore. Okay? So just to repeat that there's a great distinction between to know and to be aware, to be conscious, and that we need to explore in our meditation. In the Satipatthana Sutra, it's expressed in a strange way. It said, when a meditator is walking, he or she knows, I am walking. This is a knowing, this is not an awareness. And as I mentioned, who would be walking and not knowing he's walking? That will be somebody very mentally disturbed, you know. Walking and somebody come and say, do you know you are walking? Oh no, I did not know. Well, this doesn't seem to be so smart, you know. So it's not about to know, to walk and to be aware, to be fully present in walking. It is oneness with the experience. It's very different just from knowing. Or he said, you know, when a meditator turns the head, he or she knows that he or she is turning the head. Again, how would one would not know that one is turning the head? That does not make sense. So here it is to be understood. There is a full presence in doing that. And that's what we explore with simplicity. Not because we need to become complex. It's just because we stay very simple in the experience, close to the experience. There's physical sensation. I try just to experience it, just to feel it. What is it I am feeling in this, in the abdomen or chest, or maybe in the arms or hands? What is it I'm experiencing? Not to name it, but to feel it. Or just the expense of hearing? Just the expense of hearing. I know that maybe I'm hearing the bird or the car or whatever, but what the expense of hearing? An Italian artist, beginning of 20th century, said that whatever, in whatever place we are, we always hear noise. There is always noise. We can imagine in the desert someplace, but still there would be flies, you know, something. There is always noise. He said, and when we don't pay attention to it, it's disturbing us. When we pay attention to the noise, then it's fascinating. Suddenly there's fascination in the hearing, not in the fly, I took the example, not in the truck, not in that, but in the experience of hearing, suddenly there's a richness there. Fantastic. I don't need to name it. So if I say, I hear the truck, okay, so we get the picture, it's a truck, you know. But what is the noise of a truck? It's in a sense so rich, it's complex sound, it's going maybe louder, less loud, it's changing, and it would be very difficult if now we were asking each one of us, try to make with your mouse, you know, the noise of a truck. I don't think it would be very fantastic, would be very far from being able to make it, because it's complex. So there's this curiosity in the experience of really tasting the experience. Hearing or whatever. So here, I think the point is very important to make the distinction between being mindful or knowing something. Being mindful of an experience, to fully experience it, and just to know it, to name it, to recognize it.